Hello, and welcome to episode 14 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. If you've not already listened to the previous episodes of the show, you can listen to them via the website, www.engagingic.com, or via your favourite podcast platform. Next week, we've got a fantastic interview with Tracy Brower from a company called Steelcase. Tracy's based out in the States, and she's going to be telling us all about the future of the workplace. She's got some amazing ideas, particularly in a kind of post-pandemic world, as to what the future of the workplace is going to look like, and the fact that we will still actually need workplaces, which I think is a really interesting thought at the moment, because everyone is prophesizing that everybody will be working from home going forward. And Tracy's got some amazing thoughts on that based on her work and her research. So I think you'll find that really interesting. If you've not already been across to the website, engagingic.com, please do so. Sign up for our mailing list. Let us know what you think about the show. Give us some feedback. There's a little box that you can fill in there anonymously or with your name so we can get back to you, just to let us know what you think your thoughts are, and also if there's anything that you'd like us to cover in future episodes. We also have a Facebook group, which is by application. If you want to click on the link there on the website, you can ask to join that, and we'll let you in and you can join our community there. And finally, I ask this every week, so it's really important though, if you do like the show and it's useful for you, please subscribe to it via your podcast platform. It really does help us in terms of visibility and building a followership, and it means when people are searching for podcasts that meet their needs, particularly in an IC and internal comms and engagement perspective, it means that it helps us to show up ahead of, not ahead of anyone else, but just it helps us to show up. So that would be great if you could do that. Anyway, so today's interview starts now. In this episode's interview, I wanted to visit the area of D&I, or diversity and inclusion, and I really wanted to understand what are some of the communication challenges but also opportunities that diversity and inclusion brings. We've talked on previous episodes about ideas like neurodiversity and how we need to cater for a very diverse audience in terms of the channels that we use and the style of communication. But I wanted to look into this more detail. So my interviewee today is going to talk us through a number of areas of linked to diversity and inclusion, and particularly topics around belonging. And another area that I'd not come across before, which is intersectionality, which is the fact that we are not just diverse for very single two-dimensional reasons, that we are diverse because we are unique and we all have different areas of diverse needs as well. So that, I wanted to look at that. And the key thread running throughout the interview, I think, is the idea that communication is a key part of this. So for us as internal communicators and employee engagers, is this idea that what we do, the role that we play, is really key to making sure that we have diverse and inclusive organisations. So I hope you enjoy the interview. So for today's interview, I'm going to be speaking to Teresa Bowie. Teresa is the founder and CEO of Jungle HR, which is an award-winning HR and business consultancy. Teresa is also a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Personal Development and the author of bestseller Closing the Gap. Teresa is also a TED speaker and a non-exec director at a major NHS trust. Teresa has also worked in a number of senior HR and employee engagement roles at FTSE 100 and 250 companies. So, hello, Teresa. How are you?
Hi, I'm really well, thank you. Delighted to be here.
Fantastic. It's great to be speaking to you. And I think you're based down in Shropshire, I believe.
Yes, we are. Yeah, beautiful Shropshire.
Beautiful Shropshire. Whereabouts in Shropshire exactly?
So we're just on the Shropshire-Staffordshire border, it's a lovely part of the world. It's one of those sort of hidden gems, I think, actually. So we enjoy all the rural sort of countryside, but equally it's really commutable to some of the major cities as well. So, we're really blessed.
Fantastic. Excellent. So Jungle HR, tell us a little bit about the business. And also, I'm quite interested in the name, because I know for last time I went to Shropshire, there wasn't any jungle around there. But tell me about the name. I'm really interested to know where the name comes from and what your business does.
Sure. Well, yeah, I set up my business over 12 years ago now. So time seems to fly really, really quickly. And in truth, I wanted a name that was memorable, but was also, I'm going to say, yeah, it's sort of professional too. And the word kind of jungle HR came from the fact that actually it's a corporate jungle out there. So, you know, HR, I'm sure certainly more recently will have found themselves in this huge minefield of issues that they've had to sort of manage and resolve. And of course, as well, when you're working in the jungle, you'll come across, you know, elephants that never forget and, you know, cheeky monkeys and all sorts of other characters. And so there was a bit of a play on words, I suppose, really, when I set up the business and wanted it to be a bit of fun, which I think is representative of my personality. But there's this professional side as well. So, yeah, that's where Jungle HR came from.
Okay, and what sort of work are you working on at the moment? What sort of, I know we're going to talk about specifically about D&I in a second, but what are some of the projects you're working on at the moment, or some of the clients that you're supporting?
Sure. So, we run a consultancy practice. So Jungle HR is a consultancy practice. We work with executive boards and leadership teams during times of change and business transformation. And, you know, let's face it, we've never seen such huge amount of change and transformation as we have in recent months. So I work with, as I say, the leadership teams to help them really think about how they can deliver their business performance through and with their people. Again, I've never known an organization that isn't based or built around their people. So people absolutely sit at the heart of all of that. And of course, when you work with and through your people, that's really when you start to think about diversity. So, you know, we provide diversity and inclusion and consultancy solutions as well. So we do leadership development, we do executive coaching, help organizations, say, with their strategic planning and diversity and inclusion solutions as well, which is where my book and the model came from.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to move on to that. So yeah, so we met through another interviewee, Antoinette Oglethorpe, and I was really interested to hear when we had a chat about your D&I work and also how that kind of links across to employee engagement and internal communications, which is what this podcast is all around. So you've worked in a number of roles with, you know, the link to employee engagement, and you've consulted with them on this. So I'm interested for you, what are some of the connections you see between an engaged and well-informed and well-managed and well-led organization and D&I, and how your work sort of feeds into that?
So when you have an engaged workforce, they are going to certainly perform at their best. You know, they're going to want to give more by way of, I'm going to say, their time and their effort. They'll feel committed, they'll feel connected. And of course, typically to get to that point, employees need to feel like they belong. And so when you then start to sort of unravel all of those things, it is about having the diversity of the workforce. So, you know, not all the thinking is the same. You're going to sort of have, you know, broad perspectives. You're going to have different points of view coming forward. But it's great to have diversity, but then you have to, as I say, to ensure that people feel included and they have this sense of belonging. And that is absolutely where employee engagement really comes into its own. So how satisfied is your workforce? You know, how do they feel that they're being communicated with? And I'm going off on, as I say, lots of kind of areas here, but, you know, communication is absolutely vital. You know, it's not about communicating in you know, singular ways or even one-way communication. It is about ensuring that it is inclusive, it's diverse, that you're thinking about people, can they access it in an auditory way? Can they get information in a visual way? Have you thought about, you know, materials around your business, but also with your customers as well? So, as I say, people sit absolutely at the heart. And when you create a culture and an environment that enables them to feel like they belong and that they are included and valued for who they are, actually, then that's when you'll start to really, really drive engagement within your organization. So there's this huge connectivity between having an engaged and a happy workforce and an increased productivity. And diversity is just this beautiful golden thread that kind of goes through all of that. So diversity and inclusion and belonging, those are key ingredients for me.
Yeah. And in terms of the way you would define diversity, because I guess there's traditional definitions of diversity, and you've alluded to in what you were saying there, that communication styles, diversity in terms of demographics, age, all of those different perspectives. So I guess you would define diversity in its broadest sense from the work that you do, yeah?
Yeah, so I think the importance really is to think, many people think about diversity and they will go to the protected characteristics. So gender, age, race, disability, ethnicity, for example. But actually, organisations really need to start to think about intersectionality, because, of course, we're not just one of those particular protected characteristics. We have a whole range of those that I'm going to say most of us can relate to. And so I think when we think about diversity, it's beyond those protected characteristics. It's about our unique difference. It's about who we are. And I suppose when I describe it, I like to think of it, I'm almost going to say, as either art or a culinary experience. I'm not great at baking, although in lockdown my skills have improved, I hasten to add. But if you always bake a dish or paint a picture using exactly the same colours or exactly the same materials, whilst it may taste nice and whilst it may look beautiful, I'm talking about art, obviously, and the culinary side of things, imagine how much more rich and the depth that you can experience if actually you started to bring in and utilize some alternative ingredients, or you enable them to surface. And that's where diversity comes into play. So for me, it's diversity is almost, I'm going to say, the rich ingredients of the tapestry of life. But you can have all of those things, but you have to create an environment where people feel included, where they feel able to step into all of those things, where they feel safe to be able to be who they are I'm going to say share their life experiences, which for some may be very painful, actually. Some people may not be ready or comfortable to do that, but just for people to be valued for who they are. And then that in turn creates a sense of belonging. So you can see how they kind of weave together. But yeah, for me, diversity is just this beautiful, rich tapestry that we have called life. And actually we need to value that and really allow people to kind of celebrate their unique difference.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that idea. I've not heard it put in those terms before. Did you call it intersectionality or is that the term that you used? Yeah. I guess, we're all multiple Venn diagrams with lots of different overlapping bits, and no two look the same, do they? And I like that idea that it's the sum total of all those differences rather than just sort of a crass sort of single dimensional way of looking at it. So, okay. Your book, which we're going to go on to talk about, and you mentioned this when we spoke prior to the interview, about you have a model which is the tribe model, TRIBE. I think that would be interesting to share with our listeners, because I think that's a really interesting way that you've got of structuring the work that you do, or the way that you approach diversity. Could you tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, so I like things that are simple, and I like things that are memorable. But I think it's also important to say that there is no specific or prescriptive path to follow when it comes to creating an inclusive workplace culture, or when it comes to diversity and inclusion, because the sheer nature of it is about unique difference. But what I wanted to do was to provide a framework, and that's, I guess, what I love about the model is the framework means that you can review each of these components that I'll share with you in a moment and work out what it's looking like within your own organization? Because I tend to find that organizations, they implement some diversity and inclusion initiatives, and it's great that they're taking a proactive approach. However, they're not a holistic at times. They often fail to address any systemic bias. They may just be seen as tokenistic. And therefore, that's why I wanted to create this methodology. I gave it the name Tribe because I think, you know, we play a role in a tribe. We typically reach out to our community, really, don't we? You know, when we're when we're feeling in need of some support, there's a kind of support network available to us, whether it be in the workplace or out of the workplace. And, you know, and our role at times will change. And that's why I picked that particular name. So the T element stands for take stock. And this is where organizations really start to think about, you know, what's the context? And we know, of course, that, you know, this year, 2020, so far, I mean, goodness me, somebody's really got hold of our branch, haven't they, and shaken the tree that is the world quite dramatically. And so it's you know, it's changed the landscape for all of us, actually. And so we absolutely need to pause. We need to take stock, not only for our people, but also for our customers, for the communities that we serve. And so the T element stands for take stock. Say, what's around us? What systems, policies, processes, procedures do we have? The R element is about raise awareness. So, you know, why is it important that we do, you know, recognize and value unique difference? Why is it important that we need to start to raise our awareness and our appreciation for difference? Because, you know, actually, there are so many things I can't do, and yet there are others that have a completely different skill set that is going to be very complementary to me, for example, and they can do these things. So, you know, when we start to look at that, it's really important. So raising awareness, understanding our difference, understanding the strength that it brings, and not assuming actually things. So, you know, we've recently, of course, well, I'm saying recently, you know, there's the Black Lives Matter movements, and it's really important that we understand the lived experience of some, which is just horrific, actually. And we start to have an appreciation for the challenges that individuals are facing, and then start to think, well, what do we need to do to champion equality for all? So that raise awareness piece is important. We then have the I, which is inspire and involve. So how do we create a platform for individuals to be able to feel inspired? And it's really interesting because often, you know, you will see some of the most inspirational people. And I'm going to say they are our everyday heroes. They don't realize they're doing just brilliant things. And again, we've seen so many of these amazing examples in recent weeks with COVID-19. So, you know, how do organizations, going back to the employee engagement piece, how do we create a platform so that we can recognize the brilliance that these people have? Again, it will be different. How can we provide them with accessible role models so that we can open up doors and show them roadmaps and possibilities and inspire others to really, really kind of step into their brilliance? So that sits within the inspire and involve. The B element of the methodology stands for build for the future. So again, going back to my analogy of, you know, the tree having a good old shake this year in 2020, we have to build for our future that is going to be really different than the way that it has been before. You know, a lot of organizations will have broken traditions, you know, in ways that they never, ever thought that they would be enabled to do. So I'm going to pick working from home, for example. You know, many organizations previously may have never even conceived the idea of having their workforce working from home, but for some it's been absolutely essential, and it's been the only way that they've been able to you know, exist going forward. Now, it's not for everyone. However, it's about what opportunities does this now create? How can we use technology to ensure that we are building for that future? So, as I say, that sits within the B element. And of course, we've got our apprenticeships, actually, I'm going to say, within the build for the future. So how do we create a workplace that is going to be right for all generations? And then finally, the E, which is often gets forgotten, but is a really important component, and it's embed. So how do we embed all of this within an organization? So going back to something I said at the beginning of the interview, many organizations do some of those initiatives in an almost, I'm going to say, slightly tokenistic way. They might look at what others are doing and think, oh, that's a good idea, we'll apply that. And whilst in principle it may do, but it actually, you need to check whether it's right for your organization. So embedding all of this within your organization is absolutely vital. And of course, running through all of those things is communication. So how do you communicate all of those things that you're doing? How do you engage the workforce? How do you get them to understand the role and the contribution that they play? Because for me, you know, creating this inclusive workplace culture, it's not the role of one, it's actually the coming together of many. And so that's why I think, you know, the creating your tribe and everybody understanding the role that they play is really vital, and communication is almost the bedrock for that.
Okay, so that's a really useful. I mean, what would be useful actually is there. I know we'll talk later on at the end of the interview about some links to how people can find out more about you. I don't know whether there's a link we could maybe share with people to the tribe model. Have you got that? Is that something we could put a link in for?
Absolutely. I have a free scorecard actually that individuals or organisations actually can take. And they would answer 40 yes, no questions each around the five key stages in tribe. And it will give them a free 16 page report to help them to identify where they are now and gives them some tips in terms of ways that they can improve. So, yeah, absolutely. I can share with you the link for that. Yeah,
fantastic. We'll pop a link to that into the show notes, and anyone can download it. I'd like to really focus on that last thing around communication. And I mean, what are some of the specific communications? Because I think that what you've talked about there covers a wide range. I would imagine there's a lot of leadership involvement involved throughout that, and I guess there's a sort of whole permeating this message throughout the organization, you know, particularly around the kind of raise and awareness and inspire and involve phases. But as you say, you know, it's throughout the whole thing. What are some of the particular opportunities, challenges, best practices you've seen when it comes to communicating a D&I intervention or a D&I program or more inclusive and diverse and inclusive comms, linked to your approach? I'm just really interested to tap into what you've seen working, but also what are some of the specific watch outs, challenges, opportunities that you're particularly aware of from your work?
Yeah, so I would say it's important to, think about, so diversity inclusion isn't mm-hmm. just a tick box. It's something, obviously, that organisations need to do, and they need to be mindful of for all of their activities. So I think from a communication perspective, it's, you know, what messages are sent out to the organization? And I'm going to say, are they inclusive? So, you know, do we send them out in a huge amount of written format where the font is so small that you have to get your magnifying glass out? And does everybody rely on email, for example? Well, if that's the case, then you've got to think about, you know, is this accessible to any individuals who may be dyslexic, for example, who actually, you know, may struggle to read those things and to respond swiftly? Do you always print your reports on white paper? And again, you know, it may well be something going forward that you think, well, we'll make a subtle pay change and we'll print it on cream paper, which may be less harsh for, as I say, anybody with neurodiversity, for example. Do we allow two-way communication, or is it pure tell? Are we open to difference? So, you know, instead of telling, do we invite other people's views and opinions. You know, do we have employee resource groups, for example, within the business? And, you know, some people like to call them networks. You know, so do you have those available and are they set up so that employees can start to get the support from each other, but also share their experience of the organization so that they can shape the things that they would benefit from, that would enhance their experience. There's a great, I was privileged actually to be a judge a couple of years ago on the UK Business Awards. And one of the companies that won was the Happiness Index. And one of the things that they did was they had this sort of app and this accessible platform where they literally tapped in every day. It was accessible to all their employees to find out how they're doing. Simple questions on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you today? And, you know, there was a free flowing box for people to write a comment. What they realized was it was brilliant having that, but they had to make it accessible in so many different ways. So some people like to do email, some people like to do a written format, some people wanted it on their smartphone, some people wanted just to send it via a quick WhatsApp, some people like to do a video. And that's what I'm saying about, you know, think about communication. It's not just one sort of singular monotone way. So yeah, communication with your people, what you're doing, how you're doing it, you know, recruitment. There's lots and lots of positive ways to do communication there. But I think just tapping into and temperature checking how your people are is really, really vital. And even more vital, of course, as organisations now are starting to bring their employees back together post the lockdown, and to really, really tune into the feeling of employees. Some will be excited to go back, some will feel very frightened actually to go back. You know, some people may also have had, dare I say, an epiphany moment while they have been away, and they may not want to go back. So the experience that an organization offers them and how leadership teams now manage and support their employees will absolutely set the tone as to whether their employees really want to return. That leaders have got a really vital role to play now in this, and communication is absolutely key. So empathy is way up there on a leadership skill required at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah, I would totally agree with you on that. I mean, one of the things you mentioned earlier was you know, we're recording this in 2020, which will be remembered for all sorts of things. But obviously, you mentioned about the whole situation around Black Lives Matter at the moment, the fact that that is now getting a huge amount of you know, diversity in that context anyway is getting a lot of visibility. A lot of people are talking about it. I've been around organizations long enough to know there's always a little bit of a danger with these sorts of things, is that there's a bit of kind of doing it because we've got to do it and because everyone's talking about it now, versus doing it, I always used to call it the difference between compliance and conviction. You know, it's relatively easy as a manager, as a leader, to get some degree of compliance. As I think, you know, as your model alludes to, the final stage of embed, the trick is actually making it cultural and making it stick. And you know, so compliance is one thing, conviction and actually doing it because we want to do it and it's the right thing to do. You just mentioned there about leadership and the importance of leadership, and I guess that's something that's probably really important in the whole of your framework and the way that you know you work with organizations. Just tell me a little bit about how leaders really do need to be fully behind this, and not just from a kind of saying the right things perspective, but actually walking the talk. What are some of the things there that are really important?
Yeah, so I'm going to say, for those that just think you know, a pledge and a promise on a website is going to sort of make all of this better, I think they are highly mistaken, because it absolutely goes much, much deeper than this. It is a well, you can feel the movement, can't you, quite rightly. And I'm going to say there is a huge amount of pain that is being felt with Black Lives Matters, understandably. I'm also going to say there's a huge amount of excitement. So from some of my you know, Black colleagues and people in my network, they are now excited because they can see and feel there is this movement, there is a real desire to do something different. And dare I say, going back to your question, the organizations that just post tokenistic pledges and promises and then do nothing with them will absolutely lose their talent, because I think there is such a strength of feeling. And as much as we may be facing quite a challenging time economically, I think employees will be much more discerning about who they go to work for. And that's where things such as, I'm going to say, gender pay reporting and ethnicity reporting, if they push that through, people will go and search for the organizations that they want to work for, that are attractive, that do absolutely put people at the heart of everything they do. So, you know, those that just pay lip service will absolutely lose talent, and they might even lose customers as well, actually, because individuals are feeling very, very strongly about this movement that we are quite rightly seeing, and they will take their decision to spend their money elsewhere. So we can't ignore it. You know, it is an uncomfortable place to be, but not as uncomfortable as those that are having lived experience of it. So we have to lean in. But I think the most important thing for leaders to do is to not assume what a fix for this is going to be. They have to listen. They have to ask questions, but they also have to educate themselves on some of the ways in which that they can start to make some changes. But, you know, leaders are a really privileged position. So how do they use their, I'm going to say, their power? How do they use their voice? How do they use their resources to start to make some differences to others? So yeah, there's lots that businesses can do. And those that choose not to will their competitors will absolutely leapfrog them. They'll be left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of, I think it's at a real tipping point, isn't it? In a lot of ways, you know, both in terms of what we've just been talking about there, but also in terms of, you know, how we recover from the whole situation. There's been a lot of things said about the fact that this will sort of be a brave new world with lots of, you know, some real changes in the way we approach things. And I think it's interesting to look how organizations are coming out of this and whether, how many of them are going to just sort of go straight back into focusing on the bottom line and not you know all the promises and noble words, whether that will happen or not. So I think it's a really interesting period, and I hope, and like you, I'm sure, hope that this is the opportunity is taken, and that we don't just sort of look back in a year's time and it's all like a bit of a strange dream, but everything's gone back to exactly how it was before. Because I think you know, whilst there are a lot of things I want to return to normal, there are certain things I certainly don't want to return to normal, and long may they stay gone.
Yeah, I know. I would agree. And I think many people are in exactly the same space, to be honest. So I genuinely don't believe that we ever will return to whatever that normal was. I just don't think our world wants it anymore.
No.
But yeah, we just need to, I mean, there's clearly been a huge amount of tragedy pain that's been felt. But I also want to say that it has caused the world to pause and for us to think about, you know, what can we create now that is going to be a much better future for us all. And yeah, communication is just, again, it's absolutely key in all of those things, isn't it? In terms of what we decide to do, how we choose to do it, how we build our people. And actually, you know, one of the key things, and I know I'm preaching to the converted, but communication isn't always about talking. It's actually about listening. And I think, you know, one of the big things that organizations definitely need to do now is to listen to their people. You know, what do they want? Get your people to start shaping the future of your organization, because they'll tell you what they want. And if you engage with them, they'll make it so. If you just tell them what it's going to be, they just won't feel part of it. So I think communication is key.
I agree. I think it's managing those expectations as well, and being able to It's a word that's been overused and sometimes, you know, doesn't have the power that it should, but, you know, the idea of actually empowering people. I think people are more empowered because they've seen what they can do, that people feel, you know, a lot of people I think that I deal with feel as though they've been able to do things they've never thought they could do before. And I think for organizations, it's not about, you know, give us a big long list of things you want us to do for you. It's about actually what can you start doing for yourself and just tell us what you're doing and we'll help you make sure that that's in line with the way we want the, you know, we way we see things being done. Mm-hmm. But you know, just seek forgiveness, not permission, I guess, is a good way of thinking about it. Anyway, look, we've covered some really interesting areas there. I mean, I really like a couple of things you talked about. I mean, the sense of belonging. I know whenever we've put any content out there that refers to sense of belonging, it's always been really popular. And I'm not sure what it is, because it's just a term that people are really looking for at the moment, or whether the content itself was good. But I know sense of belonging is a really big thing. And I think you kind of covered that really well at the beginning. And also this idea of intersectionality that you mentioned, I think is a really interesting way of thinking about diversity. And it sort of makes it more than three dimensional. It does really kind of, you know, back up what we all probably know, but why we are all individual. And then your tribe model, I think, is really interesting as well. And I think it will be, you know, it'd probably been nice to have spent a lot more time on that. But I think it's probably is one of those things that people probably need to look at. And I like the idea of your diagnostic as well, that people can have a look at. And then obviously the key thing there, as we've been talking about, is running through your model, but also everything, is this idea of communication and how, you know, it's a kind of a win-win with anything to do with diversity and inclusion and good communication, is that the two, you know, work hand in hand. They're kind of symbiotic relationship with each other, which I think is really important. So that's really, really helpful. So I did kind of warn you, and I think I warned you anyway, that I normally ask my interviewees for something that that even people who know them quite well don't always know about them, or something that you've done in the past, or something you do now, or so, an interesting hobby, or just something that's kind of like, oh, I didn't know that. So I hope I've given you enough warning. So what are people who know you quite well don't even know about Teresa Bowie that they'd be surprised to say, oh, right, that's interesting.
Yes, you did warn me, and I was having a good think about what I could share, and I think something that is quite random actually is when I was little, I was in the guides and the brownies. Actually, my sister was in the guides, I was in the brownies, and my mum was the guide leader, and she discovered that the Queen was coming through our county. And so she got us all to stand at the side of the road one Sunday morning in our uniforms with our flag, to see whether we could get her to stop. So it was a completely unofficial stop. We made that evening a posy of flowers out of a Flora margarine container, and put a flower oasis in, and we made all of this little posy, and we covered it with fabric and all sorts of stuff, and it looked really pretty. We stood at the side of the road one Sunday morning as the Queen went past, and she actually tapped the driver on the shoulder and he stopped, and I handed the Queen this posy of flowers. So I've got some photos in my photo album somewhere of me handing the Queen my posy of flowers in this margarine container. And I even have a letter somewhere from her thanking me for them. So there we go. That's my really random claim to fame. But
That's the first royal connection I've had there we go. Oh no, brilliant. Lovely story. Like, I won't suggest that we post the pictures of you with the Queen on the show notes, but if they exist anywhere, well, let me know and I'll put a link. So brilliant. Thank you for that. Thanks for that story. So How can we find out more about your work, Teresa? How can we? As I said, we'll put a link to the diagnostic that you mentioned for the tribe diagnostic or the tribe model that you mentioned earlier. Where else can people find out about you?
Sure. So they can find out more by visiting www. So I've got two websites. So there's one, inclusion247.com, and that's a dedicated site for all of the work that we do around diversity and inclusion. But some of the other strategic HR work that we do, you can reach me on www.junglehr.com. So nice, easy names that you can reach me on. Yeah.
Fantastic. And I'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile, if that's
Absolutely.
All right as well.
Yeah.
So people can reach out to you that way as well. And do you use any other social media, Twitter or anything like that?
Yes. I'm on Twitter. Again, I've got two handles. So JungleJane21 is my Jungle HR one. And then we've got Inclusion247 as well.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll put links to all of those in the show notes. It's always nice to for people who, again, going back to what we were saying earlier, who've got diverse ways of connecting with people and reaching out and finding out what they do. So we'll give them plenty of options there, which is absolutely fantastic. Well, it's been absolutely wonderful speaking to you, Teresa. Thank you very much for your time and for sharing your experience and your knowledge, and also the kind offers that you've made there to people to link to you and find out more about you. And I wish you all the best for the future and the rest of 2020. And it'd be interesting to see how things pan out in 2021.
Indeed. Yeah, no, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. So thank you very much for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you found this episode useful and interesting. We'd love to get your thoughts about the show and any questions you have or ideas for topics that you'd like to maybe cover in future episodes. You can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, future episodes, and we'll also let you know about anything interesting we found out about internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review. And if you know anyone else who might be interested in the show or might benefit from it, please let them know. Please share it with them and share them with them the links to the show and engagingic.com. Thank you very much.